Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante, along with Dustin Schutte, Sports Illustrated Big Ten writer. Dustin, you were off last week. We missed you.
I miss being on. Because we had some really fun games a couple weeks ago, but I'm excited to be back and talk more Big Ten football this week.
We are thrilled to have you back on, and we typically talk about last weekend's games. I just want to go back just briefly just to get your take on it. For Penn State, the big game of the year was Ohio State. We've talked about it like crazy. I'm sure most Penn State fans have had enough of Ohio State talk. But I just wanted to get your perspective as not a Penn State guy, but someone who could look at the Big Ten overall. Just real quick, your takeaway from Penn State, Ohio State a week and a half ago.
Well, I think it's kind of the same takeaway I had after Ohio State got beat by Oregon. Like this, these are two really good football teams, two teams that are in a race for the Big Ten championship game and in a race for the college football playoff. The one thing, Jim, I think we talked about before that game was I wanted to see Penn State play aggressively because basically, as you talked about, they're playing with house money at that point, right? Like you look at the rest of the schedule, it looks like 11-1 is I don't want to say a lot because it's college football, but they're in pretty good position. I thought that they started the game very aggressively, and I thought that they played incredibly well. And Ohio State's obviously a very good football team, but it just felt like they got a little bit too conservative again in these situations. But that was, I think that was my biggest takeaway. They weren't really able to do much offensively. It's just one of those things like Ryan Day's got James Franklin's number. I know that people hate to hear that, but there's a lot of talent. There's NFL talent all over Ohio State's roster. I just think in these bigger games, at times, James Franklin gets way too conservative, and you got to keep your foot on the gas. That 2016 game, I know they got the blocked field goal and everything, and they had some incredible talent with Saquon Barkley, Trace McSorley, and a load of wide receivers, but take some chances. You've lost this game by one possession how many times over the last 8-9 years? Take some chances. If you lose by 21, you lose by 21. You're still going to be in the playoff on it at 11-1 in the Big Ten Conference.
You know, Dustin, I absolutely positively think that was a brilliant analysis. And the reason why is because I agree with you. That was my biggest takeaway is they got conservative, and everyone points at that last possession where they ran the ball up the middle of the first three downs. I agree. That was just ridiculously conservative. But earlier in the game, at the end of the first half, they also didn't call a timeout, lost 30 seconds because they were fearful of giving the ball back to Ohio State with enough time to score. I swear if it were any other team but Ohio State, they would have been aggressive, called the timeout, really trying to score. And I understand the argument. Well, it's Ohio State. No, you don't. You got to play to win.
Yeah. And that's why Ohio State on that interception in the end zone, like I don't have any problem with that play. I think some people may have had a problem with that play call. I don't. You've got to make plays. And if Ohio State makes one better, then so be it. But they made a play on the ball. I don't mind Penn State taking those chances. Like you've got when you've had such a lack of success against this team, you've got to do something a little bit differently. And if that play goes a different way, then maybe we're talking about this completely differently, right? But those were the type of chances I wanted to see Penn State take more of. But again, it was just to me more of the same. And what's disappointing is they jumped a route, pick six. Like that was the game plan. Be disruptive. And I know Ohio State's good. I know they make good adjustments, but it just seemed like Penn State started the game in that aggressive mindset. And then just kind of, they did a few things aggressively, but not enough to win that game.
I agree. I don't think the passing game was aggressive enough. The takeaway for most people is, well, the Ohio State DBs are so good. the Penn State wide receivers couldn't get open. But if you watched the Penn State Washington game and watched Drew Aller just thread the needle, you didn't need much space. And the other point with that play in the end zone where Ohio State made the interception, a couple things. For that play to happen, the interception, the Ohio State defender just made an outstanding play. The fact that it was ruled an interception surprised me a bit, although it shouldn't. Any call that goes Ohio State's way does not surprise
me. You were shocked by that, Jim?
Well, not that it went Ohio State's way, but just the nature of it, okay, sure. Was, you know, like the easy call was to say just incomplete. And I'm still not sure the Ohio State player had control when the Penn State player, whose hand is on the ball, was out of bounds. But again, that's been litigated many times. The issue, though, in running that play was the clock was running out. It was the end of the first half, and they had no choice but to throw the ball into the end zone. But it was earlier in that drive when they didn't call a timeout and let 30 seconds run off the clock. Had they called that timeout, been aggressive earlier, they would have had the whole playbook if there were 40 seconds left and they're on the 3-yard line. So that's conservative. As far as just because we're down the officiating aisle here, before we get into last week's games, I will get into one specific play in the Penn State Washington game. And I know you're already into Big Ten basketball, covering all the Big Ten football. So I don't know if you saw the specific play in Ohio State, Penn State. The Ohio State receiver catches the ball, loses it. Penn State recovers, goes to review. Was it an incompletion or a fumble? Penn State, Washington. Almost identical play. Penn State player catches it. Is it a fumble? Both go to the review booth. Both go the other team's way. And Penn State fans are up in arms. Again, looking for a neutral observer's observation of it. That's what I'm looking for from you.
It is – this is what I'm going to say without just saying that Ohio State gets all the calls. because I still, Jim, I still go back a few weeks ago to that Nebraska game and how horrendous, when Ohio State played Nebraska, how horrendous the officiating was, missing spots by a yard and a half. What needs to be done from the officiating standpoint, and I think I've harped on this before, I don't know why, maybe if the Big Ten had a mega TV contract where they had billions of dollars coming in, they could afford full-time officials, year-round training, define what targeting is, define what a catch is, because I think that's the biggest issue, right? Like, when those type of plays unfold, everybody's looking at each other like, was that a catch? It's 2024, and we still haven't defined what a catch in football is. I think they knew better in 1985 what a catch was than what it is now. Like, so that to me is the big – like, you've got to figure this stuff out where it's consistency across the board. Nobody's saying – no football fans are saying the officiating has to be perfect. That just comes with the territory. It's human nature to make mistakes. You've got to be consistent, though. You've got to have specific definitions. And I'm sorry to say it, in some of these circumstances, like we've seen it before. Was there any punishment for Michigan, at least so far, for the sign-stealing stuff? No. Ohio State was the beneficiary of some calls, a lot of calls in the Nebraska game, the Penn State game. A couple calls went their way. It's very frustrating to watch some of these games. In some circumstances, Jim, I'm just going to say this, unless you're the team that is not the beneficiary of these calls, you have to beat these teams by like 3 touchdowns where the officiating doesn't matter. Otherwise, tie goes to the runner, I guess.
Well, or the tie goes to Ohio State or Michigan. I'm glad you used the word consistent, because from the Penn State fans, they see identical plays back to back weeks and have both calls go against them, and they go the opposite way. You know, one's a completion, one's a fumble, and completion and fumble, the other's an incompletion. And that's where the inconsistencies are. And what I said in an earlier show, when a play like that happens, where it's so much of, gee, what is a catch? That if I'm the Big Ten, I'm looking at the play, the Ohio State, Penn State play, and saying, gee, there's a lesson in here. And the lesson should be that is or is not a catch because of this or that. Declare it. Get that out to your officials before the following week. And even put out that information to the fans. Hey, the officials got it right, and here's why. And that's how we're going to call it. Or they got it wrong, and here's how we're going to call it. Because in 1 week, you get an identical play, and it's called exactly the opposite way.
You know what I think would help? I don't know if this would help, but I think it would. And I've had conversations about this. Why is there not if only the Big Ten had money, right? But if you had an official up in the booth who was a quote-unquote replay official, but he was the head honcho or whatever you would like to call him, up in the booth, he marks down all the penalties, that's his job. We mark down all the controversial calls, the penalties, the rulings, reviews, and then guess what? After the game, after the players have spoken, you get 15 minutes with this head official for any officiating questions throughout the game. That holds that crew accountable, and I'm keeping that official with that specific crew all throughout the college football season. I think that at least we got an explanation as to why. You get it a little bit in basketball, right, when they have the little button and they, you know, their face is on there. They give you at least some sort of explanation. This stuff doesn't have to be, oh, well, if you look at page 37 in bylaw 9 and article C, it doesn't have to be that specific. Just give us a review of, yeah, this was a catch because XYZ. This was ruled a pass interference because of ABC. I think that would help at least provide fans with some insight as to why calls are being made the way they're being made. Or if it's a bad call, just, you know what, that official missed it, and this is how we're going to correct it.
That's, I think, the transparency to the fans. So I want to hear that head honcho explain why this was ruled this way and almost identical play ruled differently. You brought up the Nebraska-Ohio State game where they couldn't mark it. This year, and I know I've said this before, but this year they seem to struggle with that more than anything. And the replay official, I'll explain it real easily. If the player goes down at the 33-yard line, you don't mark him at the 31. Not that complicated, Dustin. All right, that's it for quarter number one. And my complaining about officiating, we'll get on the field next segment. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing. Built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. He is Big Ten Sports Illustrated writer Dustin Schutte. Dustin, we ended up spending a lot of time in quarter number one talking about Big Ten officiating. We could do a three-hour show on that, so let's move on. Let's take a look at last week's games. And a couple interesting ones strike me. The first one being Indiana, Michigan. And Dustin, at what point are we all going to say, you know what? Indiana's a pretty good team. You've been saying it. I'll give you credit. You said it before the season started. Indiana was better than we thought they were going to be.
I thought they'd be better. Yeah, I still have a serious complex with Indiana, Jim. There is, and I don't want to take anything away from them. They are seriously a really good team. You don't get to 10-0 in the Big Ten without being really good. I can't get over the fact that when you look at their schedule, they have played maybe the lightest schedule in the Big Ten thus far. Michigan is another team that I told you before the season I thought would be 500, and they're staring that right in the face, by the way. But I don't think they've beaten a team yet that has a winning record. They beat Nebraska. Nebraska right now, I think, is the only team with a winning record that they've beaten. Everybody else is 500 or below. Again, they deserve a lot of credit because they're blowing teams out. And when things didn't go their way in this Michigan game, they still found a way to win. And sometimes that's all you have to do. They found a way to win. Everything's not going to go your way. But now it makes me wonder. They play Ohio State in two weeks. That's going to be their biggest challenge. What's going to happen when they play a team with both an offense and a defense? Because Michigan has no offense. Kurt Cignetti's done amazing things. They deserve their top five ranking. I'm not taking anything away from them. I just thought we saw a little bit of that kryptonite because that was the first time they played a really good defense. And they only scored 20 points. Their passing game was off, and they couldn't run the football. So,
and that, you know, I haven't seen an early spread yet for Ohio State, Indiana. I believe Ohio State will be favored by more than a touchdown, would be my guess. And I do believe personally that Ohio State will win it, if not handily. You know, I 10-point game, you know, perhaps two touchdowns. But even at that, within college football, one loss like that, even with the soft schedule, they've established themselves. They're a one-loss team. And the way the season is going, and you're going to compare Big Ten teams versus Southeast Conference teams, there's not going to be a lot of one-loss Southeast Conference teams come playoff time.
There's not, but I think my concern, I feel like I'm being too overly harsh on Indiana. What they've done has been remarkable. Like, they've blown teams out of the water, but I feel like it's okay to have that skepticism when you haven't played Penn State, you haven't played Oregon, you haven't played Ohio State yet. So my concern with Indiana versus the SEC is not the one-loss teams, Jim. It's the two-loss teams, because there's going to be we'll see how the season plays out. Still 3 weeks left, but there could potentially be some two-loss teams that have some really good wins on their resume. And you're telling me a one-loss Indiana without beating a top 25 team, potentially without a win over a team above 500, is going to get a playoff spot? Now, that's the beauty of the 12-team field, because they've obviously got a chance. But I feel like there's going to potentially be some two-loss teams that could make that argument from the SEC. The one benefit is the ACC and the Big 12 are probably one bid leagues. So you don't have multiple teams from those conferences making a push.
Well, it's interesting because I was kind of doing this myself and putting together projections for the playoffs. And I'll tell you what, I'm going to hold off on that. We're going to talk about that later because I want to get the whole big picture of that. And I'm getting myself sidetracked. Let's keep going at the games, but I promise we're gonna hit that playoff projection. From games last week, yes, Indiana, they had to prove that they could win a game when they struggled a bit. And Michigan, that's still a big-time defense, and they found a way to win that game. Another game, UCLA, very quietly. They've got, what, three straight wins, Dustin? And they beat Iowa. Iowa's not a great team, but we said going into the season they had a chance for 10 wins. Iowa did, their schedule. The assumption was Iowa would beat teams like UCLA.
Yeah, because of their defense. But their defense is not nearly as talented as it was a season ago, which is – what's funny, Jim, is I think their offense is better. Now, they had to play with a fourth-string walk-on quarterback against UCLA for a portion of that game. But they've relied heavily on Caleb Johnson. But this is a UCLA – this is going to sound weird. UCLA has been quietly maybe one of the more consistent teams in the Big Ten. Doesn't mean they've won all the, you know, doesn't mean they're a top tier team by any stretch. They're 4-5, but you go back, they played LSU tough. This was a team that played Penn State pretty tough.
They did.
The only game I can remember where they didn't really play well was against Indiana, and that looks like a pretty good loss right now, right? You could be 42-13. They played Oregon. I mean, Oregon beat them by three touchdowns, but Oregon's beat everybody by three touchdowns outside of Ohio State. So I've been really impressed. If UCLA was to get to a bowl game, if Kurt Cignetti is locked up coach of the year in the Big Ten, if UCLA was able to get to a bowl game and Indiana wasn't having this magical season, I think you would put Deshaun Foster in the category of coach of the year because of the situation he was dealt. Chip Kelly bailing on the program last minute, and for him to assemble a team that's won three straight games, 4-5, their last three games, they play a USC team or a Washington team that's 500, a USC team that's struggling, and then Fresno State. They could be bowl eligible.
Well, that the game against USC will be fascinating.
Yes.
Because the program's going in opposite directions, or at least based on the expectations. And even the blowout loss that you talked about with Indiana was their first league game. So UCLA is a better team now, I think, than they were at the beginning of this season, which, again, is a tribute to the coach, that he's got his team still playing hard, still winning games. So, you know, good for them. Good for Deshaun Foster. The other game that stood out a bit was going through the rest of the balance of Penn State season, that Minnesota at Minnesota kind of had people a little bit nervous. Minnesota was playing well. Then they go lay an egg against Rutgers, who has been very disappointing. And Minnesota finds a way to lose to Rutgers.
Yeah, that was what Minnesota's bread and butter has been, forcing turnovers, and Rutgers took care of the ball, basically. They had one turnover in the game. They were even. And then Minnesota has put more emphasis on the pass. They've been more dependent on Max Brosmer than they have on other quarterbacks in previous seasons, but they also could not run the football. And that's what PJ Fleck loves to do. They had 35 yards on 19 carries. That's less than 2 yards per carry for those of you who don't do math well, like myself.
Thank you.
But I don't want to put the cart before the horse here, but if I'm a Penn State fan, I'm still a little nervous about Minnesota, because let's go back several years ago. This is not a Minnesota-Penn State thing. There's a guy named Pat Fitzgerald who at Northwestern would drive everybody crazy because – Northwestern would pull off a big upset randomly, middle of nowhere. Yes. Wasn't necessarily they'd beat an undefeated Ohio State team. PJ Fleck has almost kind of adopted that. Like, there are games Minnesota will pull out of their behind, for lack of a better term, and you're like, how in the hell did they do that? And then they'll go on the road and lose to a middling Rutgers team. Like, that's just what happens with Minnesota. So you feel better about that game, even though it's on the road. But I would still be a little nervous, because PJ Fleck usually has his guys ready to go in these type of games.
Well, two quick thoughts on it. First of all, Penn State fans know to be nervous. Okay.
Fair.
they're not overconfident. They see that Minnesota Rutgers score and say, well, maybe we don't need to be quite as nervous, but stay nervous. And the last couple seasons, James Franklin, he's getting the national reputation. Can't win the big game. Okay. I brought up this. I was listening to a national commentator talking, I think, about Ole Miss and Lane Kiffin playing Georgia this past week. It was prior to the game. Well, you know, Lane Kiffin has a lot of James Franklin in him. He can't win the big game. You know, it's like James Franklin is now the definition of not being able to win the big game. So that's the national narrative. The other thing in talking about looking ahead to Penn State at Minnesota, I think the at is the big word here, because it's still in the Big Ten. We've talked about, you know, UCLA beat Iowa, but that was at UCLA. Yep. Minnesota lost at Rutgers. That was at Rutgers. And there's still a situation where several of the teams, and I wrote my notes down somewhere. How about this? We're in mid-November. Washington, Michigan, and USC are all winless on the road in the Big Ten.
Isn't that something?
Would anyone have guessed that? And I know that was kind of a national story several weeks ago. Travel two time zones in the Big Ten, they're 1-8. So I think that still is a factor. The last game, you know, for the Penn State fans, just want to get your take. Penn State had the rep of not starting well, playing poorly in the first half. They came out 28-0 first half against a Washington team that apparently can't play on the road.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good look, I've said this all season. I don't think Washington's a good team, but I think they're better defensively than we give them credit. And apparently that doesn't travel. But they've played well. Like, I think Penn State getting this win, you just saw the frustration boil over. This was James Franklin getting his team back. Because at points in his career, there's been times when James Franklin, the mentality in that locker room after a loss has not been great, and then they'll drop another one. That yes. They shouldn't. They lose two games in a row, and you're out of it. And with Penn State losing to Ohio State, I don't want to say you can't afford to go 10-2, but you don't want to leave it in the committee's hands, especially when there's a lot of going to be some two-loss teams in the SEC. So this was a big win. To come out of the gates firing on all cylinders was important. Just a nice, thorough win to move forward.
It was, and it was great atmosphere and all of that. And James Franklin seems to be over that hump of losing the teams he shouldn't to. All right, that's it for quarter number two. Lots more to go. Stay with us.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing. Built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Dustin, I'm Jim. We are talking all things Big Ten football with Dustin. And Dustin, we typically, every week that you're on the show, we go to your power rankings, which sometimes I disagree with some of it, but usually you're pretty good with those. And I am sure you are counting on my approval. But I think we're actually reaching the point, Dustin, where actual standings now kind of match up much closer with your power rankings.
Yeah, we're getting to that point in the season. And if you try to do this situation where who's got the better record, well, who won the head-to-head, it's just a giant mess. Basically, we know who the top four teams are, and we know who the bottom three teams are. So however you want to rank the 11 teams in the middle, be my guest, Jim. Be my guest.
Well, I actually set this up by the actual standings, and it is the top four is obvious: Oregon, Indiana, Ohio State, and Penn State. That the way I presented it, that's the way the standings are, because Oregon and Indiana, both undefeated, Ohio State and Penn State, each with a loss, and their loss was within that top four group. You have your rankings: Oregon, Ohio State, Indiana, Penn State. Hard to argue with that. Penn State fans might say, hey, better than Indiana. Well, you know what? Indiana, if you look at the resume, yes, it's a weak schedule, but Penn State has not beaten anybody. And Indiana has been very impressive in their games.
Yeah, I think that's the difference. Like, there's not Ohio State beat Penn State on the road, and then they had a one-point loss to Oregon. Indiana's undefeated, but they haven't really beaten anybody. Penn State has had a tougher schedule, but when you look at the consequence there, it's marginal to me. So I put the 10-0 over the 8-1. So yeah, I think all four of those teams. We're going to find out about Indiana for real in a couple weeks, but I think it's safe to say those three teams, Penn State, Oregon, and Ohio State, top interchangeable. I mean, I still think, even though Penn State hasn't beaten Ohio State in a while, any given Saturday, Jim, those three teams could come out with a win against any of those three teams.
And I know Penn State fans don't want to hear it, but I thought Penn State played poorly against Ohio State. Yes, obviously the competition changes how well you play, but there were things, mistakes, and they didn't play well. They didn't coach the game well, all of that. And they lost by one score and twice were on the 3-yard line with first and goal and came away with 0 points. So I think that speaks to the talent level of Penn State. And what's easily defined with those four teams is you then have nobody else with two losses. It then goes to the next level and three losses. And the three lost teams are Iowa, Minnesota, Illinois, and Wisconsin. Throw them in a bag, shake it up, pull names out. The four lost teams, Washington, Michigan, UCLA, Nebraska, Rutgers, Michigan State, Northwestern. Throw them in a bag, pull them out. And then, some obviously awful teams. USC has earned their way to the bottom. Maryland and Purdue obviously deserve to be there. Just real quick, I wanted to ask you the teams that you think obviously Indiana is the positive surprise.
Yeah.
I marked down the four teams that I think just really disappointed. Michigan, despite what you called for them from them, but Michigan, Nebraska, Rutgers, and USC are my elite four or non-elite four.
Yeah, and you know what's funny, Jim, is I fall for this bait every time. There's always one team in college football. Maybe it's one team per conference, but there's always that team that everybody tabs as the Cinderella, the team that there's going to come out of nowhere. That team was Rutgers, and we fell for the bait again. We thought, oh, look at the schedule. It's Greg Schiano. Maybe this is just what this program is, 500. And there's – I don't want to say there's nothing wrong with that, but maybe this will be the spark. Maybe the win over Minnesota will be the spark. They'll get to those 8 wins we talked about. I don't see that happening, but maybe. I'm going to throw in – I think Nebraska's been disappointing, especially they started off 5-1. And then to get blown out by Indiana and lose to Ohio State and then UCLA, 3 straight losses, like they've got to get to a 6th win. Otherwise, there's going to be some real problems in Lincoln. The other team I've been disappointed with, I'm just going to throw another one in there.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think Iowa, 6-4.
Yes.
I know that they've been injured, but the way that their offense has played I don't want to say for the defense to take a major step back, because I think that that was a generational defense we saw the last 2 years. Again, with their schedule, to me, this should be probably an 8-2 football team. So for them to be 6-4, and I don't know that you feel a loss to Michigan State, that's not a very good football team. I don't know that you feel good about, I don't know if you feel good about Iowa in their last 2 games. You probably think they're going to beat Maryland, but that's a road game. Who knows? And then they play Nebraska, which regardless of how Nebraska's season has finished out, they've played them tough. They beat them in 2022, so who knows?
I'm with you. And, Nebraska I had also as the disappointing team. Iowa, that's a good point. I think we looked at schedules, Iowa and Rutgers. It was, hey, Iowa, they often come out of the old Big Ten West, and they had a Big Ten West schedule.
Yep.
So the field – and Rutgers – and I fell for the Rutgers thing because I thought they were getting better, and they escaped Penn State, Ohio State, and Michigan. Hey, this was the schedule. They brought in a transfer quarterback. Would he actually be the threat that they needed at that position? And that just all fell apart for them. So, that's disappointing. Indiana obviously is that Cinderella team. And you now look at it, Dustin, looking at the national picture and the national rankings, the Big Ten has 4 of the top 5 teams in the country. And I think the national narrative is they're still not buying Indiana. They're still not buying Penn State.
Yeah. Come on. this is what I've said along, as much as I was critical of Indiana earlier in the show because they haven't played anybody, if this was Ole Miss, where do you think they'd be ranked, Jim?
Oh, just if
number
you're
one
Southeast,
or number two, right?
Yep. The Southeast Conference is going to get the benefit of the doubt. And that kind of leads me to, you know, the question there is, by the way, the Southeast Conference is an absolute mess.
Yes,
okay?
It is.
Okay. There are three teams with one loss, Tennessee, Texas A&M, and Texas. A&M and Texas are going to play each other. So someone will have that second loss. And Tennessee has to play Georgia. Now, you know, which way do you think that goes? I would imagine Georgia will be a favorite.
Yeah.
And if that's the if Georgia does beat Tennessee, which again is chalk, that's not, you know, projecting an upset, you would finish with just one team with one loss and everybody else with two losses at least, Dustin.
This is what I'm talking about when it comes to the Indiana versus the SEC teams question, because if Indiana loses to Ohio State, you're going to have a two-loss Georgia team with a win over Tennessee. Like, I know they've got other wins. I don't have their schedule right in front of me, but they're going to have some other – you're going to have a two-loss Alabama with some signature wins on their resume. So, Jim, you give me a lot of credit for predicting things. I'm going to give you credit because you said that this was going to be the first year the committee was going to have to actually do work, and you're right. They're going to have – I mean, we'll see how the rest of the season plays out, obviously. But that's – that whole thing about a one-loss Indiana with no signature wins – against a couple two-loss SEC teams, maybe it works out where all those teams get in. But, man, it's going to be really interesting. And if Indiana doesn't beat Ohio State, I'd be chewing on some fingernails in Bloomington because you don't have the brand recognition to just get in.
Well, here's my thinking. If they keep it competitive, they'll be okay.
Sure.
Get fair. Blown out and you'll create the questions.
Yeah.
And, you know, because there'd be the other part of this question is what's worse, a blowout loss to Ohio State or a loss to Northern Illinois?
Another good point. And let's not forget that they say that this doesn't matter, but it does. Notre Dame lost that game in week two. Indiana Correct. Would have lost that game in week 13. I don't know how it adds up. 13.
Yeah, the next to last game. So, but. Excuse me. How about this? We are getting to the point where you could actually project these things intelligently. And I don't want to take credit for this projection. I think it was Stuart
Why would we
Mandel.
Do that? Why would we do anything intelligently, Jim?
That's a good point. That's why start now? but you could kind of come down to let's call Ohio State over Indiana for sake of argument. And then Ohio State would play Oregon in the Big Ten championship game. Yep. The winner will be the number one seed in the country. And the loser will probably get the number five seed, the best of the. He had Alabama playing Texas in the Southeast Conference championship game. Pick a winner. The other one will be an at-large team. ACC will get the number three seed, either Miami or SMU. The loser eliminated. And Colorado's probably going to play BYU for that fourth one. Loser eliminated. So there's your top four seeds. But then the at-large, he has Oregon or Ohio State fifth, Penn State sixth, two-loss Georgia seventh, perhaps two-loss Texas eighth if Alabama beats them. Then Notre Dame 9th, Indiana 10th, Ole Miss 11th, and Boise State 12th. I think there's a lot of logic to it. It's at least close where you could sub this team versus that team, and it's the four best Big Ten teams making it, and a couple of Southeast Conference teams with two losses would also get in.
Yes.
It kind of makes sense to me.
It does. I think that does make sense, but I think – where some of this gets interesting is, and I've got to look at these standings here really quick, so bear with me just a minute. Okay, so let's, for the sake of argument, say it is Colorado and BYU in the championship game, Big 12 championship game. BYU is undefeated. Their only loss is to Colorado in that championship game. It's a close game. They have to play. Indiana does not.
Okay, we're going to pick it up from there when we come back, Dustin.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Dustin, I'm Jim. Dustin, you left us on a cliffhanger at the end of quarter number three, which was what happened? BYU undefeated, going into a Big 12 championship game against probably Colorado. If they beat Colorado, it's Colorado's third loss. They're out of it. BYU is the lone rep, deservedly with an undefeated season. Your question was, if BYU loses to Colorado, then what? I think this is kind of leads back to your question about Indiana losing one game and putting it in the hands of the committee. I think Indiana right now is up to number five. So a loss to an Ohio State team, who may be the number one team in the country, that's not as bad as BYU losing to a two-loss Colorado team who, you know, is only going to make the playoffs by winning the conference championship. My take is BYU won't make the playoffs if they lose the conference championship game.
So my argument on the other side would be, well, Indiana didn't get an opportunity to pick up the second loss because they would not have beaten Ohio State or Oregon in the Big Ten championship game. So I don't know what they would do because it's not like BYU has played a murderer's row of opponents. They have basically played Kansas State and that is it. Like some of these teams looked like they were going to be better earlier this season, but it's just it's not how it turned out. So it would be incredibly interesting if Colorado won the Big 12. That would be a situation where do you see two teams getting in? Now, again, like Indiana, it's not like BYU has a ton of brand recognition, and it's not like the Big 12 is going to alter the course of college football by getting two teams into the playoff, right? So what would you rather have, four Big 10 teams or two Big 12 teams? So that's just one of those scenarios where it always feels like the Big 12 is the one that gets the wrong end of the deal, but that's just how it works sometimes. So that would be a very interesting scenario. It feels like the thing I love about this 12-team playoff, Jim, is it feels like when you're sitting there watching the conference tournaments during basketball season and you're a bubble team and you're hoping those automatic bids win those tournaments so that way it doesn't steal one of your spots. That's how it feels right now. And we still got three. We still got a lot of football. Still 3 weeks. A lot of things. BYU could lose between now and then, but there are some interesting scenarios kind of presenting themselves right now.
There really is, and I think the college football playoff committee kind of has tipped their hand. And just full disclosure for when you're listening to this, we recorded this prior to the Tuesday night. Second week of the college football playoffs. But, you know, going into this undefeated Miami going into this weekend was, I believe, ranked fourth. So that kind of tipped you off that if they had stayed undefeated and lost the ACC championship game, good chance they would still have made the playoffs. But, you know, BYU had not been getting that benefit of the doubt. So that's why I think they're lost. And the same thing where Indiana, you know, up to a few weeks ago, I think we've had a similar conversation about Indiana. But in the meantime, they've worked their way up the ladder. And again, just going by the AP poll, they were up to number five. I got a feeling the playoff committee is going to be equally generous with Indiana this week. And the thing of it is, you could do that because you know they still have to play Ohio State. And it's obvious if they beat Ohio State, yes, they've made the grade. And if they lose and I didn't believe in them, hey, I still got my opportunity to drop them.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what's going to happen. Indiana, that game has so many ramifications. And I think you're right. I think if that's a close game, if that's a game that's decided by a touchdown, maybe even 10 points or less, then I think you look at Indiana and you say, okay, this is a real – like, I think they probably secure their spot in the college football playoff. If they get beat by 30 points or something, which I don't think that's going to happen. I think this game is going to be played within two touchdowns. But if they got blown out, it would be really interesting to see how far they would fall. Because, again, if they had an SEC patch, they probably fall to, like, number 8 or number 9. But because they're in the Big Ten – and because they've had the schedule they've had, I could see them falling out of the top 12.
Well, and I think you hit it. And I'm with you. I do believe Indiana will be competitive in that game. But I acknowledge there is a world where Ohio State could blow them out. I would not be stunned if that were to happen. And that's the point where there's now for those folks who say, hey, Indiana was all – you know, just smoke and mirrors, and that's how they were undefeated. Here we've got the reality of who they really are. So I think for them, it's going to be style points in that game is going to be important. And as you put it, the Southeast Conference schools with two losses, but if they have big wins, you could forgive Alabama losing to Vanderbilt. The interesting thing, though, is I do think for the first time, you will have to look at strength of schedule. Missouri, a team that I've been calling a fraud since day one, with two losses, who has Missouri beaten?
Yeah.
And it's been reflected, though, in the rankings, as opposed to Georgia and Alabama.
Yeah. I think that's the big thing, right? Like, at the very least, you're not just rewarding Missouri for just winning games. They've anytime they've had a big challenge, they've fallen short. They haven't been overly impressive. So, like I said, you've got two loss Alabama and two loss Georgia with some signature wins on their resume. Texas A&M is the one that I think, if I remember correctly, they really don't. They're at the top of the SEC, but I don't know if they've got a big win on their resume. Now, I'm not a huge follower of the SEC, so I'm kind of spitballing there, but I think that they're resume is to the same point of Missouri, where it's a little bit okay. That's fine.
Well, I think though they have a win over LSU.
Yeah, that one looks worse and worse. No, I shouldn't say worse and worse. It doesn't look as impressive.
But I think the thing with them is they've got to play Texas yet.
Yeah,
and Tennessee, who's also at the top of the SEC with just one loss, they have to play Georgia yet. So Tennessee beating Georgia more than legitimizes them. I think A&M, if they can beat Texas, legitimizes them. And, you know, Texas, I don't think Texas's schedule has been as bad as a lot of other SEC schools. But if Texas gets their win against A&M, that would be enough to legitimize them. So they will get that. And then Georgia and Alabama, by the way, Georgia has to beat Tennessee. A three-loss Georgia, I'm assuming they don't get in.
No, I can't imagine there's a world where a three-loss team is getting in.
But Alabama has two losses, and their final games are Oklahoma and Auburn. I think, you know, they're going to finish with two losses, and they're going to be a playoff team.
How dare you? They also play Mercer this weekend. Thank you very much.
I overlooked Mercer.
You did.
Do you know what? It's really understated, but the Keystone Kickoff Show does have a very representative audience of Mercer fans who listen to us. So,
hey, the Bears are 9-1 down there in Macon.
I do apologize to all of our Mercer fans. All right, let's take a quick look at this week's upcoming Big Ten schedule, and I'm not sure there's a big game on this schedule here. Do you have any thoughts of an upset with Oregon at Wisconsin?
Not really. I would say that Oregon has kind of played with their food a little bit against Maryland. They didn't look, but they don't have to be against Maryland. I think they'll be locked in for this game. Wisconsin is coming out of a bye week, so maybe that, and it's at Camp Randall Stadium, a night game, maybe that gives them a little bit of an advantage, but I think ultimately Oregon's going to pull away. I'm intrigued to see how Illinois responds. They lost two straight games after a 6-1 start, and then USC and Nebraska. This is a big game for both of those programs. So it's not like a national, it's not a huge national game with major implications, but in terms of going bowl eligible, that's a big game for Nebraska. And it's interesting to me, Jim, has Lincoln Riley lost his locker room? 4-5. This was a team with playoff aspirations. Are they just going to kind of cash it in the last three games? I think that that's, I think Nebraska is still obviously playing for something. They want bowl eligibility. USC. I'm interested.
Do they care? If they make a bowl game at this point. And were you surprised that they're making a change at quarterback?
Not necessarily, because if you're Lincoln Riley, I think you have to do something. And this might just be at this point, and this is why I think maybe some of those guys have cashed out. You have to do something. I think you're starting to look, how do we get better for next season? I think that's Lincoln Riley's mindset at this point.
And what it does is for all of those, all of us who don't like Notre Dame, you wonder, could USC be at least competitive with Notre Dame in that last game of the season?
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, we probably don't have enough time for this, but this is the problem with the way college football is now. I don't think a lot of these kids care about some of these rivalries anymore. I don't think USC kids care as much about the Notre Dame rivalry as they used to, unfortunately. I could be wrong. I could be overstepping, but that's just my take.
I wonder if there's the element of not because it's Notre Dame, but because it's a playoff team that you could play spoiler with.
Sure.
Does that create some interest? I think we have to look at USC, though, as a team with a lot of talent whose their ceiling – is high enough that they're capable of winning a game like that.
Yes.
The fact is that, they haven't played to their ceiling. Penn State fans will understand. USC, I mean, LSU fans learn that also. But do I expect it? No, I do not. And Penn State is going to be playing against your Purdue Boilermakers. Is this going to be anything other than a glorified scrimmage?
No. I Purdue's just trying to get to the finish line, and we'll see what happens in the off season with the coaching staff.
That's a rough year, coming off a rough, really, just dominating win for Ohio State. Speaking of which, Ohio State has Northwestern, a little bit of an interesting game. UCLA is going to be at Washington. Kind of an interesting game for those two teams. We talked about UCLA going in with a three straight wins. All right, Dustin, great to have you back. Great to talk Big Ten football with you. And thank you all for listening. Be sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, Enjoy Cafe Tea pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.